It is widely understood that donating to a nonprofit can provide an opportunity to make an impact while also creating a tax benefit for the donor. Understanding and navigating the nuances and various ways of giving can both help you and your organization of choice. As a nonprofit organization, we work with many donors each year that strategize and implement the smartest ways of giving towards causes and projects they believe in. Join us as we take a closer look at charitable giving. Patty Luis, my name is Sophia. I'm the co-host of this podcast. I'm joined with Executive Director Peter Abadjian. Patty Luis, Peter.
Patty Luis, Sophia.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, Eric Nixarian, a certified financial planner professional at EP Wealth. And he's going to share with us how to get involved with charitable giving. Welcome to our show, Eric.
Thank you.
So you have a certified financial planner designation. What can you tell us about the benefits of charitable giving?
And before you answer that, Eric, what can you tell us about being married to Sophia?
Of course. We had to get a Peter question out of the way first. The benefits of being married to Sophia are many. not enough time to explain all that. But I think really to go back to the question on, you know, benefits of charitable giving, I think they're twofold. One is you get to donate to a cause that's important to you. You help a charity fulfill their mission. That may not otherwise, you know, be able to have that same impact or survive without your contributions. The second, which I think is mainly why we're here talking today, which is the benefit to the donor. You know, donations can be and have some tax benefits. It largely depends on the tax situation of the donor. So I think that's, you know, really important that when you're thinking about, you know, what kind of charitable donations you're deciding to give, that you seek the advice of your tax advisor, tax professional, financial advisor. And as we get into more some complicated strategies, that the help of an estate attorney as well can be key in those areas. And I want to say up front that, you know, anything that we're discussing today is meant to be general and educational in nature, not as a recommendation for specific strategies. I think everyone's situation is very different. So,
yeah, that makes perfect sense, Eric. Thank you. So, you know, the Paros Foundation is a 501c3 charitable organization. That's a designation given by the, you know, IRS. And that means, you know, that we can receive charitable donations, basically. But in that world of charitable contributions, you know, there's a buzzword, it's called planned giving. How does planned giving differ from, you know, writing a check or, you know, doing an online, you know, Facebook donation to a charity?
Yeah. So I think they are different because you look at, you know, I think a large portion of the people that give and they especially for the type of people who are mainly looking at it from a tax perspective, you know, may just be giving the amount that reaches right above the standard deduction limit. Maybe they're looking for an itemized deduction to write off for that year. Or they're, you know, smaller donations, looking online, finding the posts that are being shared across social media through Facebook and Instagram, and looking for those types of more activism kind of you know, calls to give. And then there's planned giving, which is more, I would say, intentional, and perhaps, you know, can help a family or an individual really have or leave a legacy that they want to instill upon maybe their kids or have their family leave a mark with a certain charity. It's different because there's usually larger dollar amounts involved. There may be more complicated instruments on how to fulfill those donations. And, you know, planned giving in the term itself is there was some planning involved, right? It wasn't just a spur of the moment kind of thing. It took a lot of thought and detail and attention that, you know, with the help of their team, maybe came up with the best strategy, not just for any one specific year, but maybe a string of years or a lifetime. So those are how they differ. And I think there's really important distinctions. So somebody who's thinking about, you know, giving can approach it one of those two ways.
Is planned giving something that, you know, is only estate planning, is only essentially in wills, or is it something that people do before then?
Yeah, it's a great question, Peter. Planned giving is done both while somebody is living, and could be, a planned giving strategy could be leaving money to a charity upon a death, like an inheritance or a bequest, within a will or a trust. So those are the, and also I think the other thing that we sometimes forget about is IRA beneficiaries. So having a retirement account that you want to leave to a charity as well can also be done, can be a type of planned giving strategy. I'd say they're both ways to think about it. I think what people who really believe in charitable giving, who have kids or do it as a family, can really make it a learning opportunity for their kids or for their family to, you know, have and write out a mission statement, a giving statement. You know, what do they want to do with this pool of funds that they've set aside for giving to charities? What specific charities meet that and fulfill that mission? And have that be kind of a staple or a learning opportunity for them to instill that type of giving throughout their rest of their lives. So I think it's both, and they're both are equally great ways to leave that kind of legacy.
I want to talk a little bit also about the current gift and estate tax exemption amounts for 2023. The current limit is $12.92 million per person, which would be $25.8 million per married couple, which is an extraordinary amount of money that can pass to the next generation before being taxed. But that current law is only in place for a few more years before it actually sunsets in 2026 and reverts back to pre-2017 levels. So somewhere in the range of $6 million per person, basically going to be cut in half. So what families are and individuals are reviewing now with the help of their estate attorneys, their financial advisors and tax advisors is to look at, what those estate and gift tax exemption amounts are and where they will be in a short amount of time and see if there's any opportunity to begin planning out their giving or their bequests to family members in such a way where they're taking advantage of the current higher gift and estate tax exemption amounts.
Oh, that's amazing. Look, I've done this for an awful lot of years, running an organization, that has a charitable purpose and, trying to raise money and work with potential donors and sponsors in the community. What are, other than the very straightforward, picking a project and writing a check, the less more straightforward, but still pretty straightforward, putting a charitable fund in an estate plan or, in a will kind of thing. What are some of the other creative ways that people can donate to charities? I mean, we all see the ads on, the radio and on TV about, donating your car, this kind of thing. But, what are some of the more interesting or complex vehicles that people could pursue if they were interested in contributing to a charity in the long term?
Yeah, well, we start simple. So I think you brought up the first and probably most common way people use to give, which would be writing a check or donating essentially what is cash or already cash. That is, a one very good way to do and do regularly. But I think where people can be more strategic and perhaps more tax efficient is, next step would be maybe looking for a stock within someone's stock account or portfolio that's in a taxable account. So that's not something that's in a qualified retirement account, but something that has maybe a stock that has appreciated in value since the time you bought it. And rather than selling that stock and paying the capital gains to make your donation and write the check, you can opt to donate the stock directly. So that would be the next, probably, you know, more complicated way, but it is a bit more tax efficient. By donating the stock directly to the charity, you avoid selling that stock and paying the capital gains tax on that sale. Potentially, if you're selling it at a gain, and if you once reporting that gain, if you're in that tax bracket, that you pay capital gains tax. So that would be the next way. There are vehicles, I think one of them to talk about that's really important is a donor advised fund. A donor advised fund acts as a charity itself, but it's an account that can be set up by a donor. It's a middleman, if you will, and this donor advised fund can receive the stock that the donor wishes to donate first. So if I set that up, then I get to control how those dollars get doled out to various charities or that one particular charity. But when I donate the stock to the donor advised fund, that counts as my charitable contribution for that particular year. So it gives donors a chance to make their donation to report for their taxes, but gives them time to think about and strategize how they want to dole out the money from there. And also gives, you know, them an opportunity to, you know, rebalance those funds if they want to continue letting that money grow and accumulate. They can have that money there, reinvest it, not pay the capital gains tax for selling the stock and reinvesting those dollars because it's acting as a charity itself.
So if I can interrupt, is the vehicle, we've received and we do receive donor funds from donor advised funds. Typically, is that kind of vehicle set up when, you know, let's say I have a business and I'm retiring and I sell my business and I decide, you know, instead of paying capital gains, for instance, on my business that year, now that I've sold this thing and I have some capital, I can take a portion of that and put it right into a fund that year. And that will ultimately help reduce my bottom line for that taxable year. And then I can use those funds over the next several years to donate to charities. Is that a Reader's Digest version of how
that's it. I think it's a great kind of scenario to put into perspective that can apply across different professions and actually, you know, different people. Maybe they're a business owner and maybe they, you know, sell their business, so they're going to pay a lot of taxes that particular year. It brings up the strategy that we use in our field called bunching. So for one, I would seek the advice of your CPA, your tax professional, and your financial advisor and estate attorney when thinking about doing this, but especially when you have a big event like that. But you could be, you know, working a corporate job and that particular year, maybe there's an IPO and you have a really huge tax, you know, a bill that year from exercising and selling stock, or perhaps there's, you know, just a year where maybe you're working on commission and you're doing really well and you have a high tax year that year. Bunching is this idea that you want to donate a larger, maybe many years of what you otherwise would gift and bunch them into 1 year. So you can offset the higher tax year that particular year, but still with using the donor advised fund. I'll give you an example. Maybe I'm donating $1,000 every single year, but because I have a high tax year this year, I may donate $5,000 in this 1 year and donate it to my donor advised fund. From there, I can still dole out $1,000 each year and keep my regular donation going, but I got the tax benefit of bunching that 1 year. And then I just won't use that donation or won't donate to the donor advised fund for a few years and then wait 5 years until the next one. So there is this idea of bunching. You can offset higher tax years by doing that bigger gift. And it's probably something to consider, especially the impact to your taxes is going to be greater, you know, the higher bracket you are. And so it does help. It does help. It's those types of things that we do help clients, you know, strategize. And I think you kind of work as a team and find what makes the most sense. It could be a donor advised fund. There are other vehicles. One of them, I think it was something that you had brought up earlier, Peter, but a charitable trust. And so those are also complex vehicles, which involve an estate planning attorney with that, because you have to draft a new trust and create a new trust. And it's a big commitment, especially looking at, you know, just the costs and administration of something like that. It's costly. You know, those are additional costs that you wouldn't otherwise incur if you were just donating directly to the charity or to the donor advised fund. So I think there has to be not just a tax motivation behind that, but also a really deep charitable inclination that you really want this money to be going to charities and that's your ultimate goal and leaving that legacy. So there's got to be another motivation behind it to go through the process. But there are some interesting benefits to doing something like that. Just to really quickly on the charitable remainder trust, the idea there, the key is the remainder. There's two parts of a charitable trust. There's an income beneficiary and there's a remainder beneficiary. To save you the lingo, there's money that goes at the end of the term of the trust or upon the death of the income beneficiary, that there's money that goes to the end person. And then every single year during the term of the trust, there's also income that gets kicked out from the trust. The remainder trust means that whatever's left in the trust goes to the remainder beneficiary, and that would be the charity in this case. There's also a charitable lead trust, which means the charity is actually the income beneficiary. And then the remainder is, you know, the estate or heirs or whoever is named as the ultimate remainder beneficiary.
So this actually leads into my next question. It sounds like these more complex vehicles take additional wealth. It sounds like you need to be of a certain financial level before you can consider launching these kinds of funds or more complicated donation instruments where you're working with an advisor, for instance, and strategizing. In your opinion, how much money do I need to have? Or when do I start working with an advisor before I can start considering these kinds of more complicated donation vehicles?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you have to wait to consult somebody when you're thinking about, you know, how to best strategize, you know, your donating vehicles or strategies. I think when you're talking about the more complicated instruments, there are certain dollar amounts that make it more meaningful and more cost effective. So, rather than setting up a CRT, I think that a charitable remainder trust, when you're dealing with, you know, just $1,000 or $10,000, that's probably not going to be as meaningful or make as much sense, cost effectiveness, and impact, as opposed to, you know, the larger dollar gifts, like $250,000 or more. Those I think where those thresholds kind of get to, do you have to wait to be wealthy to start working with an advisor? You don't. And building wealth is a function of habits, and building good habits early on will benefit the long run in a meaningful way. So I think consulting somebody about how to build those good habits is something you do not need to wait to do. There's also, I think, something in the background at work that for, you know, people, who are in the professional services industry, people who are advisors, estate attorneys, tax professionals, who are kind of paying attention to more and more, not just ignoring the younger generation right now, that you know, maybe hasn't built their wealth yet, but stand to inherit a large, I mean, the numbers are tremendous, but a very large amount of wealth in the next, call it 20 to 30 years. But I think, you know, there's organizations that look at this. Fidelity happens to be one of them. They provided a pretty interesting survey by Fidelity Institutional in 2023, actually earlier this year, that Gen Z and Gen Y stand to inherit a significant share of the $84 trillion that's going to be transferred between 2021 and 2045. It's a big range, but you look at the demographics of that, and you say, I cannot ignore these younger people who are entering the workforce today, who may not, or maybe have been in the workforce for the last 10, 15 years, maybe haven't built up a significant amount of wealth, but already are thinking more about donating to charities, who are probably, you know, open-minded and giving in nature. And we have to look at that and say, okay, maybe we can get out in front of this. Maybe we can start to introduce some of these strategies and use now what they stand to inherit as kind of a good place to really begin, you know, talking about legacy and, you know, what that means to them and their families. And so that's where I think these conversations will become more and more commonplace. We've already seen an uptick in how many charitable remainder trusts we're talking about. And so I think it's becoming more commonplace. It doesn't have to wait. And it does also provide kind of a really interesting, in the backdrop of what's, you know, stands to happen over the next 20, 30 years, that I think there will be more and more of this happen.
That's incredible. $84 billion number makes me think www.parlsfoundation.org.
Trillion. Yeah. T with the T.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Significant amount of wealth. And I think that is, you know, part of the question that you had asked earlier, which I know we've gone over time, but I just want to address everything as much as I can. But, you know, you don't have to just donate stock when it comes to these vehicles. There are other special assets. There are rules that come with those special assets, you know, whether you're donating like a piece of real estate or, you know, shares of a privately held company as opposed to a publicly held company. Artwork. It is also looped into that as, you know, something that is a special asset that may have special rules around it, depending on how the charity uses that artwork, if you're selling that artwork. So all of that is consult with a tax advisor, consult with your estate attorney, find out what works best. But it is, you know, it's not just limited to cash and investment securities or stocks and things like that. So There's a lot that goes into it. One thing I hadn't yet mentioned, but I want to make sure I note, is the qualified charitable distribution, or known as the QCD. Those are for those people who are over 70 and a half. Most of them are in that required minimum distribution age. Those are monies that have to come out of your IRA. So if you saved a lot in your 401k, your IRA, you've, you know, retired, and while you have to start taking them out at some point because the IRS has you know, required that those account holders start to distribute some funds, that there is a direct contribution or, sorry, distribution that you can make directly to a charity called a QCD, which will exclude that income because all of that distribution is typically ordinary, Texas ordinary income. But donating that part of your IRA directly to a charity will exclude that income from being reported, which is a direct off the top, you know, deduction or above the line deduction for those people. So I think as far as tax efficiency goes, that's probably one of the best ways to donate. But you have to be in that age range to do that. And I think something, again, you should consult your tax professional about. So that way they're also reporting things accurately as well. But custodians are usually pretty good record keepers of that stuff. Just want to verify all that. But no, those are other great strategies as well for those IRA owners above 70 and a half.
Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of helpful information. And You know, of course, we have to end with our signature question of what can people do to get involved? What can people start doing today after listening to this podcast?
Well, I think, you know, people can look at their situation and maybe reevaluate how they donate. And I think if we take a pause to consider that, then hopefully we've done our job here. But I think really it shouldn't preclude you from donating, but certainly, you know, want to look at, you know, what it is, what vehicles you're using to donate, and are they the most efficient? And the other thing is, look at your company, you know, depending on where you're working at, some employers actually offer matching, company matching, charitable contributions. So, those are great ways to also double your impact immediately. And I would double check your company's rules around that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very helpful. And I hope everyone listening learned something and gained something.
Thank you so much, Eric. This was terrific.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I love listening to Potty Luis, and I appreciate you guys having me, and hope everyone out there listening was able to take something away from today.
Thank you for listening. We hope you have a great day.